Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and I'm joined today by, for the second time, but this time for a little bit more time, Greg Rosenthal of the Around the NFL Podcast, writer for NFL.com, and a frequent guest on NFL Network as far as training camps go for the Dallas Cowboys. How are you doing, Greg? That was the most long-winded, awful introduction I've ever given.
No, I don't think it was long enough. You missed a lot of my special honors and awards and, you know, things I've achieved over the years, so I like it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's been definitely an exciting week for you, I'd assume, just because you guys on your podcast made a really exciting announcement at the end of last week that you're going to London. Are you pretty hyped up for that? Like, when do you guys, like, start packing up, start getting ready to go? Sounds like you're obviously going to be doing a lot of work, but also sounds like a nice little vacation, nice little fun time across the pond.
Yeah, it's amazing. We're going for 9 days, September 2nd to the 10th. It will not be anything close to a vacation. They have us jam-packed, but it'll be an experience that we've never really had before, and we're excited. Like, a live show and some Q&A, and just being there once before by myself, I know that the London audience and the UK audience in general is, like, rabid. Compared to the American audience, which is great too, but it'll be something else. And doing Sky Sports all day throughout week one on that first football Sunday, like, I can't wait.
Yeah, for sure. So are you ready to, like, watch football at like 3 a.m. in the morning?
Yeah, it's a little tricky. That opened the kickoff game. I don't know what our plans are for it, but yeah, it starts, I think, at 1 or 1:30, basically. So I think some of their casinos are open 24 hours a day. I don't know where we're going to watch it exactly, if that's allowed by NFL rules, but we got to figure something out.
Well, wouldn't you be able to use International Game Pass?
We could, but then we would be, like, sitting by ourselves in a you know, a hotel room, right, which sounds kind of depressing. I'd rather just sleep and then wake up and watch it on Game Pass if that was the case. I think we'll all get together, and they might even be doing some sort of event where we all watch it together, so we'll see.
All right. Well, yeah, that's actually a really good, like, opening night matchup between, like, the Eagles and the Falcons. I think that should be a good time. But we're going to save the football talk for kind of a second half here. I wanted to start with a little bit of non-football stuff. You, it turns out, are, like, a big tennis fan. Can you kind of, like, I've always been a little bit confused. Like, how did you get kind of into that right now? And, like, what's your hottest take on tennis right now?
Literally, right when you called me, I turned on Tennis Channel, the Washington City Open, to just have on mute kind of while we talk, keep an eye on a little first round Stan Wawrinka Donald Young match. So I'm deep into the tennis.
So how did that become kind of a pastime, I guess?
I grew up, that was my sport growing up. So that was, like, the sport I was definitely the best at. And, you know, we, like, won a state championship and all that sort of stuff. I would have played in college if not for going to, like, a top 20 program, which I had no business being a part of. but I don't know. I was always a fairly casual but decent fan for a long time. And then probably in the last, like, five or six years since I've had a kid, I've become just a rabid fan. I think partly because it matches up so well with the NFL season. Like, it really starts getting going right as in Australia as the playoffs are going, and then it ends by Labor Day. So basically, the tennis, you know, the best part of the season is kind of the NFL off season, and it's good. You know, it's on in the mornings, it's on late at nights, like when you have a baby. I think that was part of it. I started watching the Aussie Open, and I don't know, I love it as a spectator sport.
So right now, like, what's your hottest take on golf? Like, who's
on tennis?
Yeah, tennis. I'm sorry. Those are the country club sports. I get them.
No, see, I hate.
I get them mixed up.
I hate golf. Golf is, it's like, it. there's only one sport that I just root against the sport doing well, and that's golf. Like, I can't golf to play it. That's fine. I played, you know, as a kid sometimes or whatever. I worked at a couple country clubs, but I can't abide by people watching golf. In terms of hot takes, you know, I love Naomi Osaka. I would say watch out for her. I feel like she's, I'm not breaking any ground here, but I feel like she might be kind of like the next big thing in tennis.
Okay. I do want to know this because I don't know who that is. There are like three tennis players I know. So Serena Williams has been in the news a lot lately. Like, if you could, I have like an NFL, NBA, NHL kind of brain. Like, for the NFL, if you could pick someone's legacy that kind of matches up with Serena Williams, what is her, like, greatness level?
Oh, I mean, there is no one but Jim Brown or Tom Brady, someone like that. You know, the best player ever. You know, and kind of change the sport. So Jim Brown maybe sounds like a good one.
How did she change the sport?
Because, you know, she and her sister, I would put them both there, two girls, like, growing up in Compton, you know, California. And you just mentioned it's a country club sport, which I think it's gotten a bad rap over the years. If you actually look at the top shelf players, so many of them, like Djokovic and many more, come from a pretty wide variety of backgrounds. But so, there's no story like Serena. I mean, she kind of did it her way, her and Venus and their family, and to kind of come and really not be part of like the quote-unquote tennis establishment from where they come from, I think was kind of inspiring to a lot of people out there. And just her game, her power game, kind of changed the sport. I mean, there's a, you know, it after she came in, basically the entire sport had to adjust and step up, because you know, the women's game just like had to step up to like five levels in terms of power and athleticism.
Yeah, for me, the turnoff for golf is I don't understand the scoring system, like at all. Like, it's kind of confusing to me.
Tennis,
like,
you mean, right?
Yeah. Dang it.
No, it is. I have kids. That's the worst part of the sport, is like when they're watching. And they like to watch, because I always kind of have it on in the background and they know the players and stuff. But I, you know, my daughter's six and she's like, she's smart as a whip. And I still don't even really try to explain the scoring. It's stupid. I mean, it's really not that hard to explain, but the score within each game has no real solid logic to it. So I don't blame you for not understanding.
Yeah, but like, with tennis, like, I love, like you say, like, watching the athletes, like, it's a really fun, rather fast-paced sport to watch. I just wish I understood the scoring more, and then I think I might get more into it. Like, if there was a golf reporter that you could recommend that... Not a golf! God damn it! I keep... A tennis reporter...
If you say golf one more time, I'm going to hang up. That's it. The end of the interview.
Tennis. If there's a tennis,
okay.
A tennis, like, reporter.
Okay. I got two for you.
Yeah.
Courtney Nguyen and Ben Rothenberg, and they do a podcast called No Challenges Remaining, which is not as regular as it used to be, but those are two great places to start. It is sort of a dream of mine, if things fell totally apart in football, to get paid to talk and write tennis. The problem is there's like no jobs in that, and like the entire world is certainly not in this country, so it's kind of a tough market to break into.
Well, hey, maybe you could start another spinoff pod and just talk about tennis. You already have a name. I'm pretty sure someone stole the name Courts of Thunder for you. from a website.
I just have no faith that anyone would listen to it, and that's fine. Not everything that you're passionate about has to be beloved by the masses. I love it. I get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I'm a big part of the Around the NFL subreddit, and I wouldn't be doing my good journal work without asking the tough questions. Speaking of spinoff pods, RJVP, is it ever like Is there even a glimmer of hope for us? Or
yes.
Are we lost?
Stay tuned.
Really?
I'll say stay tuned. Keep an eye out. I'm feeling like there might be an update sooner than later. So that's all I'll say for now.
Like more than 10% or less?
I just said stay tuned. If anyone out there listening likes RGVP, then I think we could have some good news for them sooner than later.
Oh, man, I am so hyped. I'm very excited now. Let me tell you, actually, I know Anthony Jeselnik does not read anything anyone sends him ever, but by word of mouth, if you ever need something to be like, hey, this was worth it, I like was vehemently against stand-up comedy, and then I listened to that podcast, and I fell in love with like watching like different kind of stand-up people, and I really like I know Anthony Jeselnik's humor is more dark and things like that, but I really like his sets. I watched his Netflix special, and like I had a good time listening to that show. I think that show has made me laugh, and it's a thing where like sometimes like if I'm bored, like once every 3 or 4 months, I'll just go back and I'll listen to just like 2 or 3 episodes in like a row. That's how good it was. It remains poignant over time.
I will tell him all of that from you, and I'm sure it'll be really meaningful to him and inspiring, you know, him to try even harder at his job. I listened to it again recently too for the first time. I don't think I ever listened to it the first time around. I've made it about halfway through, and yeah, I can't quite believe that it existed on NFL properties and that we got away with a lot of the stuff, and that it's still sitting there. Like they should delete.
Oh no, no, no! Don't put that in people's heads. Bringing Touchdown Air Bud into our lives is one of the greatest things that show has ever accomplished.
Yeah, that's fine, but like, you know, having a scenario where we talk about how quickly Air Bud would die,
yes.
And that Air Bud certainly would have CTE after getting all of those basketballs to the head over the years, like that's more the sort of stuff I'm talking about.
Yeah, talking about how you named your bong in college Casanova Frankenstein, which is one of the more interesting Greg Rosenthal facts out there in the general populace. There were a few things on there that were like, man, they're pushing the envelope. And especially like when you think back to it, especially with your podcast, I love your podcast, but you could definitely tell the Shadowy League figures cracked down on like the music and stuff. Like the fact you guys were able to play like licensed music that much for even like 5 episodes is just insane.
Yeah, we got through like half the season before they started cracking down on the Lil Wayne clips. But I'm hopeful, you know, if it does come back, maybe we'll get around that in a certain way. So we'll see.
Hey, I mean, that's the other thing. That podcast introduced me to your old Droog, who like I now follow his music. Like he's a good
wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I follow your old Droog on Twitter, of course. He's a man.
Yeah, shout out your old Droog, which is a nice transition to a little game that sports talk radio shows play in the summer that every podcast in America does, that I shamelessly copy, which is Mount Rushmore's. I want to know, and maybe we can go back and forth. We can do a little bit of a draft. We can go one of two ways. Either your favorite rap album or your favorite rap artist. Where do you want to go as far as Mount Rushmore's go?
You know, these are difficult conversations that I probably should have, you know, prepared for. I guess I would have to go artist just because that's easier.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, I'll let you have a first pick.
I think I'll take Outkast, you know, right off the top.
Yeah, Outkast is good. I like, it's so interesting to see kind of a progression of rap, how long their albums were compared to like what you get now. So I think from, and it's probably because I'm a millennial with a short attention span, but like I love Outkast certain songs and I love some of their deeper cuts as well, but I think I've listened to like Stankonia all the way through, and that's the only Outkast album I've ever listened to from like front to back.
See, if you went for just albums, Aquim and I would be, you know, at or near the top of my list. But this is, you know, dating myself somewhat. I saw like Outkast a couple times, you know, in college when they're, you know, touring off of Aquim and I tour. So that's like right in my wheelhouse. But I would say front to back, and then both them, they're basically the best group of all time. So the fact that I'm getting two MCs, two of the greatest, for the price of one, and a bunch of insane albums, to me that's not that tough a choice to go number one.
Yeah, I feel like this is gonna be a little bit generational, because I'm gonna go Kendrick Lamar with my number one pick. I think
this is like the whitest podcast possible.
Definitely.
Going back and forth, you're the one that put me in this position.
Yeah, no, I am. Yes, this is the white guys that like rap show.
Wait, for the record, I like
other music too.
Indie rock, I would say, as much, and you know, and even just regular rock, whatever, just as much as hip hop. But when I talk about it on our podcast, I think it's because it's like my one entry into popular culture that I probably don't really have in any other field. So it's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. yeah, so I'd say Kendrick Lamar, just because I think like, I don't know, I can't point to an album that he has and say that's a bad album. Like, I feel like it's almost constantly just great albums that he puts out. So yeah, I'd go Kendrick Lamar number one overall.
Yeah, that would be on my list. I'll give you a hot take. How about that? Damn is my favorite Kendrick album. It's like no one would agree with, but I don't care.
I mean, it's not a bad choice. I like Good Kid, Mad City a little bit more, because I don't think there is a single bad song on Good Kid, Mad City. But like, Damn is close. There are a few that, like, coming to think back on it, like the Loyalty song at first, I didn't really like the 1 Feet Rihanna. I didn't like that one, but it's kind of grown on me over time. So I mean, I could definitely agree with you on that. That's not that hot a take. I think a lot of people might kind of agree with that.
Okay, all right. I mean, that is one you can play all the way through, except Lust, which is a terrible song.
Oh, I actually like Lust, like that.
And Fear, like it's a good song, like. But I can, you know, I can skip it because it's like 8 minutes long and maybe you're not in the mood for it. But every other one, it's all good.
Yeah, absolutely. Humble, banger, everything. Like, it's a good time. So,
All right, we should wrap this set because it keeps getting whiter. But I'll go next if this is Rushmore. And I guess I'll just go easy and go with Wayne because I feel like the like 5 year run he had from 2005 or so through 2004. See, this is after I was in New Orleans, but between the Carter 2 and then all of the mixtapes that kind of went through, and maybe just after Carter 3, but I'm messing up the timeline. Like those mixtapes and then those albums, that run to me is about as fun as anything.
Yeah, I like Lil Wayne, but I get constantly made fun of by my friends for liking Lil Wayne, which I like. He's not the most lyrical guy, I guess, but
this is terrible analysis by the way. He is the most lyrical. I mean, that's what those mixtapes are about. Like, no one is, that's sort of his thing, is just ridiculous wordplay. But maybe you're going off the albums, which aren't necessarily, probably are not his strongest stuff.
I won't lie to you, though. I found like one Lil Wayne song that I had never heard called like Fireman, and that has been the song of the summer this year. And it just annoys my other white friends who enjoy rap when I play it, is the fact that I'm listening to like a 2000 song.
That was when I was in school in New Orleans, and that was a huge song, and that was the song that we played from Lil Wayne repeatedly on RJVP. So yeah, even that was 3 years ago. Maybe it's stuck in your brain.
Yeah, no, I noticed that. Like, I started playing it, and I was like, where have I heard this before? But no, it's a great one. All right, you're right. This is getting very white. So let's wrap it up. Just go rapid fire. Your three pick, and then I'll go rapid fire my three pick.
That was my pick. Oh, I thought we were just going back.
Oh yeah, I got to go with my second pick. Let's go, just because he was kind of my introduction to rap, Eminem. Can't have two guys, white guys, talking about rap without mentioning Eminem. So I'll take Eminem.
Yeah, I think those four, that's good for the Rushmore right there. Although I wouldn't have Eminem on it, but, you know, maybe.
All right.
Maybe Jay. I don't know.
Who knows? All right.
I think who would be next? I don't even know who my next would be. Kanye certainly is in that mix. Probably Kanye.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on because you were made clearly uncomfortable by this segment. that's a good job by me. So I have a few short football questions for you, as you write about football. I'm not the biggest like fantasy guy in the world, but I know that you helped kind of put together the staff at Roto World, which is considered by many one of the best fantasy sites out there right now. So I was wondering if you could give me a little, like, fantasy hot takes, because the fantasy extravaganza on your show seems like it's far away. But right now, if you just want to give me, like, some hot takes about, not necessarily hot takes, but let me start with this. Who is the best fantasy running back this year?
Zeke. I would go with Zeke, but the top of the league right now, and I've written about this, not related to fantasy, but just generally, to me, it's the best group of running backs since the early 2000s, which is when I started in fantasy. So Bell, Zeke, David Johnson, and Gurley, those are like four about as close to no-brainers who are going to get a ridiculous amount of receiving yards as you could possibly have, like, entering an NFL season. So I'm guessing those four might be going off the board, the top four in fantasy. Or, you know, I don't know if any receivers are getting in there. I don't even play fantasy, I have to admit, at this point. But I would go Zeke. You couldn't go wrong with any one of those four, but I would go Zeke because, to me, he's the most bulletproof, and I just have a feeling he's already probably the best runner in the league, just, like, pure runners. I've had people in front offices tell me that, and I think he hasn't even really been at his peak. Like, I don't know if they've gotten the best Zeke possible, and I kind of think they're going to get it this year. And I also think their line is going to be great, and they love this first round pick, Connor Williams, too, who's playing guard. So it just seems like he has so little chance to bust. That's pretty much true of all four of those guys, but I would just give the edge to Zeke.
So a guy who's kind of getting a lot of, like, traction within fantasy circles is Saquon Barkley. I don't really buy it because I think the Giants' offensive line is still bad. Am I right to not buy it, or should, like, I buy into the Saquon Barkley hype?
No, I would buy in. I mean, it depends where and when. I'm sure he's going early, probably in the first round. I wouldn't put him over any of those veterans. I don't know if I would put him over some, like, veteran receivers like Julio Jones, etc. But he's in that mix because as long as he's healthy, he's going to get 50 catches, and he's probably going to get 275 carries, and that alone makes him, you know, a top, you know, 20 pick, and I think he'll be good. He might have a little boomer bust in terms of a lot of 1 and 2 yard runs before he gets like the big plays, but I think the catches and the big plays will make him a great pick, and he might be the fifth or sixth, you know, running back.
Do you think this year's rookie running back class, not just in fantasy but just in general, is a little bit underrated? Do you think that maybe we went into the draft kind of saying, oh, there might be one or two great running backs. And do you think that we'll come out of the season thinking that this produced like five or six of the next great league running backs?
No. I think last year's was underrated, like Dalvin Cook's coming back and Kareem Hunt. Obviously, it turned out to be a great class. Off the top of my head, though, I'm not thinking of the rest of this class necessarily making like a massive fantasy impact. Even Darius Geis, who was my second favorite guy going into the draft, is in a spot where you know he's going to give up catch it. He's not going to catch the ball probably that much. He'll be fine, but I don't know if he's going to be like a superstar right off the bat. I think he's more of a role player.
That's a nice little transition. You're really high on the Redskins offense. I really like the Redskins offense too. I think it's really talented, but again, this is moving off of fantasy. I think the number one like concern people have is kind of their defense, because outside of Josh Norman, it's not bad, but it's not like the top of the NFC as far as defenses go. Do you kind of have a concern with their defense, and like what do you kind of see as far as what this Redskins season is going to kind of look like?
Yeah, I do think their defense is a problem. It's blah. It doesn't have nearly enough top shelf, you know, difference makers. Certainly even the pass rush, I don't think they have enough. They are thin at cornerback after trading Kendall Fuller, and Bashaud Breeland's gone. I don't think it's a very good defense, and it hasn't been under the entire Jay Gruden era, and they're probably going to get worse. I just think the offense is going to be fun to watch. I think Jay Gruden's an underrated play caller, and if they stay healthy, they have everything you want. Like, the reason I was down a little bit on Geis is because you have Chris Thompson, and you have good backups for Geis, and then you have the deep threats in terms of Dotson and Richardson. You have the guys over the middle, Crowder and Jordan Reed. Even if Reed gets hurt, you almost got to expect it at this point. And I don't think you got any worse at quarterback with Alex Smith. I just don't. I think he's as good as Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
And the line was so hurt last year, and they have pretty talented players overall. Trent Williams is like could have had a Hall of Fame career if he was just a little bit healthier, but they in general they're pretty talented and should be a good offensive line, and they were just so banged up last year that kind of got lost in the shuffle.
So to close out talking about fantasy running backs, who might like bust this year, who kind of broke out last year, who do you think that might be this year?
Trying to think. Running backs are weird. Like Kareem Hunt would be a logical choice, but I'm not gonna say him because I think the Chiefs are too good offensively. Who are the breakout people? I feel like it wasn't that great a year for running backs.
I mean, Alvin Kamara.
Other than the top guys.
Alvin Kamara. Yeah, I guess you're right. That's a
I definitely wouldn't say Kamara. I wouldn't want any part of Mark Ingram this year. I don't know how high he's going, but I just feel like the Saints are a little down on him, not just the suspension, but even when he comes back. Like, Fournette is a guy I'm not in love with. I don't think he'd be a bust, but in maybe the losing the 15 pounds and now he's maybe a little more just up with what he needs to do as a pro, and that'll take care of things. But I just wasn't, like, that impressed with what I saw last year. I think his numbers were probably better than how he ran. Devontae Freeman's getting drafted really early. I think he's an awesome running back. He's not necessarily a totally reliable fantasy guy. And then now I'm looking at the draft picks. People are drafting Derrick Henry very high. I'm not into that. Rashad Penny, the Seahawks, very high. Not too into that. And Alex Collins was great last year, but those guys that just kind of have a long stretch for 1 year, often, as Chris Wessling pointed out recently, don't quite make it back and do it again a second time.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for that. To kind of close us out here, if you don't mind, I went to the Around the NFL subreddit for some questions.
Why would I mind?
Well, I don't know. I was just...
What kind of monster do you think I am?
Well, I don't know. I don't think you're a monster by any means. I think that NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal is a busy man. And, I mean, I don't want to keep you away from your I'm sure what is a I'm not even sure of a word. I lost it. But a nice nightlife in Los Angeles.
We got time. Don't worry.
All right. For sure. Okay. So, the first question is this, and I'm going to translate this a little bit. It says, how did it feel to leave a life of privilege and luxury to take a lowly paid job in sports writing? Now, let me change that a little bit. What is kind of like your backstory of how you got to this? Because I feel like yours of your entire podcast is kind of the least known. Like, Mark's very open about how he kind of wandered around like Boulder and doing menial law jobs and then kind of stumbled into this job. And Wes with his Tybee Island story, and Dan, who kind of wanted to do this from the beginning, went to school for journalism, all that.
Although he did baseball for a long time, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that, so, you know. Thank you for the fun fact.
That's maybe his number one sport, I would say.
All right. That's a hot take. But yeah, I guess the question to you would be like, how'd you kind of get to where you are right now?
The short version, I grew up in Western Massachusetts, you know, not Martha's Vineyard, kind of like a farmish town. It's called Wilbraham. It's right outside of Springfield, which is basically a dump, which is why I find, I find all the vineyard stuff funny. That's where my parents retired to. But I went to Tulane. I worked out in California for a couple years as like an assistant to a movie producer, and then on a bunch of different TV shows and production, like on the other side of things. And I eventually kind of stumbled into a production job at Fox Sports, working the World Series and NFL Sundays, like choosing what highlights they were going to play partly, and then writing like copy for the Fox Sunday news team, like whatever would show up on their teleprompter, etc. That sort of stuff. And that made me realize I just need to get into sports, and the production jobs all made me realize I need to get out of Los Angeles because they were driving me crazy, the entertainment industry. And so I moved east, and I ended up eventually at RotoWorld starting their football coverage. I wasn't, you know, I was only 25 or 6 at that point. And I definitely got very lucky being at a time and a place when fantasy sports, you know, was just really getting going in terms of how popular the information was, and RotoWorld really took off while I was there, and NBC bought it, and that led to more, you know, opportunities at NBC and Pro Football Talk eventually when they came aboard at NBC and then found my way here. So this will be, I think, my 15th season, if I'm doing the math right, doing football. I never really did any other sports. I helped a little with baseball, like in the very beginning at RotoWorld. That's about it.
All right. The next question is this, and you can answer this however you want. Who's the 60% G of the NFL?
I am. What, you haven't been listening?
Well, no, like, I guess.
I mean, I get my paycheck from the NFL. I'm going to outlast, you know, I've seen it. I've outlasted almost every player that's been around, so I don't know. But that's a good question. Who should I go with?
Who embodies you? Not maybe physically, but just like as what you stand for, I guess. I don't know.
I would have said, you know, Malcolm Butler's up there. I love me some Malcolm Butler. If I gotta choose a guy that I want to go to the mat with, that I'll take. And so, you know, maybe I'll get benched for mysterious reasons in key moments of my career, but I think he's got the right attitude. Maybe a little Troy Brown back in the day. How about that?
As a Patriots fan, what's your a follow up on that?
Another answer would be Jay Cutler, because I've always been a supporter, not just of his game, although I did really like how he plays coming out, but basically of his attitude. And I felt like you know, everyone thought he was kind of a jerk, and I knew the wavelength he was on, and now watching him on Barry Cavallari, it's confirmed all my thoughts, and he's definitely a 60% G.
For sure. All right, as a Patriots fan, kind of following up on Malcolm Butler, what's your theory on why Malcolm Butler didn't start in the Super Bowl?
I don't have one. I'm not going to make one up. I don't think there's probably any real. My guess would be there is no real answer. It was just sort of a combination of various things.
All right. And then, oh, here's another Patriots question. What is
he seemed a little, by the way, like a little out of his mind. Even the season before, not to cut you off, I'm sorry, but like
you're fine.
The contract situation and everything with Stephon Gilmore coming, it was in his head as early as the season before Gilmore even got there. And I think all that stuff got to him and his relationship with the team in a negative way, that it's not about like whose fault it was. You know, the Patriots certainly could have treated him better, but I think by the end of it, it was like a troubling, you know, it was something that Belichick just felt like he couldn't abide by, probably. And there was something to that. It's not like that came out of thin air, and he didn't, you know, he had his worst season easily, I would say, through it.
Okay, the next question here is, what has been your favorite Patriots team to watch?
Oh, one, you know, you can't really replace the first. So, the first, you know, that was just kind of a gift from football gods. You know, I can remember where I was watching every single one of those games after they were 5-5, even before, but starting with, like, the loss to the Rams in the regular season, I think made them 5-5, but they were very competitive on prime time. I think that pushed them to 5-5, and they didn't lose another game. Like, that run after that was so ridiculously improbable and kind of magical. It's hard to imagine any season topping that. I mean, they were easily one of the worst teams to ever win the Super Bowl, but it sort of made it all the more fun. I would say the next one, though, was the 2014 team that won their first one in 10 years with Revis as a huge part of it.
Awesome. My follow-up for that one would be, before we get to our last question here, would be, are you worried at all about the Patriots coming into this year?
Not really. I actually think they do their best when there's like a little bit of doubt and something to battle against. That's kind of what I wrote about this week. And it kind of reminds me of 2010. That was probably the last time people were really doubting them going into the season. That was when there was a lot of like, is this the end of the dynasty talk? Was after they got blown out by the Ravens, and they really restarted the team in 2010. And it wasn't, maybe it wasn't quite as dramatic in terms of, well, it's hard to tell now because they changed their entire like profile of how they played offense that year. But this reminds me of that a little bit, between a ton of additions on defense, a new coordinator, the new special teams rules, and getting Cordarrelle Patterson, which I think is going to be a big deal. And just a little bit of pushback of like all the negativity that they've had thrown in the last couple of years. To me, they still have a very solid roster and no reason to think they're going to fall off a cliff.
The final question here is just...
And if they do, I'm at peace. 8 Super Bowls in 17 years. Like, when they won the 4th Super Bowl, it's like that. I felt like that was good. And so, you know, I think Belichick and Brady deep down know how improbable and ridiculous this is all. And so they've had a run that might never be topped and certainly unprecedented. So it's like, what more do you want? You know, they should just become a bad team just to even it out.
I'm not sure about that, but I do think this is the year that maybe they go like 11-5 and they have to play as like a what in that wild card weekend at home. I think that
maybe, but then like maybe, and it's, but it all depends on how you get there. Like at this point for a Patriots fan, for the Patriots, like literally nothing else matters in the playoffs. So it sort of makes no difference. Everything that happens before that sort of doesn't really make that much of a difference at this point. That's sort of just the, their stakes. So like if they went 11-5, but then they're back in the Super Bowl, then, you know, then that's all that really matters.
All right. And the last question here is just kind of division by division. Who do you think's going to win the division? And if there's a wild card team out of that division, and let's start with the AFC East.
Yeah, I can roll through these, although I'll probably change them at some point. No idea. I would go for division winners. I would go Patriots, Steelers, Titans, and Chargers. And then I'll throw the wild card teams to, it's much tougher in the AFC, I think. But I think I'll go Ravens and the Chiefs just for the hell of it. I don't know.
For sure. All right. And then the NFC?
And then the NFC, I think I feel a little better about what, because I've been thinking about this more. The Eagles, Packers, Saints, and Falcons both make it, and then the Rams and Seahawks both make it, and that leaves the Vikings out.
Wow, that's kind of a hot take. What makes you kind of like,
those predictions are so not hot take. Like every single season there's more turnover and more, you know, transition in terms of the playoff teams than that. But everyone always just kind of predicts the same teams year after year. I mean, that's basically what I just did. So that was very safe.
All right. Well, I didn't think it was half bad.
I mean, the good thing is no one ever remembers. That's one thing I've learned. One thing I've learned over the years is that predictions are worthless. good and bad. No one knows anything. And if you happen to get some right some year, it doesn't mean you were any smarter. You just got lucky.
Who's the one player, and this is really the final question, that you are excited to watch in this preseason?
Lamar Jackson, maybe, because I think he'll play a lot. Rosen, for sure, because I'm excited about him. I think, you know, the preseason over the years, it's you know, you learn it's kind of about the rookies and the running backs. That's about it. Like, yeah. You know, you're not going right. to, yeah, there's some fun things to watch, but the rookies and then the running backs, especially ones that are in battles, you can get a little bit of a feel just because that's the only time you'll be able to see them.
Right, for sure. All right, man. Well, hey, thanks for joining us on this edition of the End Zone Podcast.
Yeah, I'm really sorry that I wasn't able to complete the Mount Rushmore drill for you. I feel like I really let you down.
Hey, it's all right, man. Maybe next off season you'll be able to think better.
I'll think about it ahead of time next time.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We will see you guys next time. All right, so that was awesome. Big thanks again to Greg for coming on. This was an awesome show. Sorry we didn't have a show out yesterday. Like we said, we had a little bit of technical recording difficulties, and we weren't able to get one of the recordings. Hopefully we'll be able to do that within the next week, because it was kind of a preseason storylines that we're looking forward to podcast. I hope to have that up soon, but if not, we are definitely going to be back on tomorrow, which is actually the birthday of the podcast, with for sure some kind of show will be out tomorrow. I promise you that. It may be short, it may be long, it may be with another really special guest that I'm hyped about. It may not be. But come tomorrow, our birthday. It's going to be a good time. I think this is episode 120. I don't really keep track after 100 and like I take a look around 50, but I think this is like 120 or something like that. So again, thank you guys so much for your time. Thank you so much for listening. And then our division previews start Friday. We're doing a combined show with the Peers of Mind podcast. So go ahead, follow his Twitter at Peers of Mind. And Friday, I believe it's 9 Eastern time, we are going to be live on Twitter and Facebook. And you can catch the show live there. Or if you want to just listen to the audio, then that will be out early Saturday morning. So, hope that you guys enjoy Greg Rosenthal. Again, thanks so much for coming on, Greg. We will see you guys tomorrow. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.